Blog Talk Radio.
Brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the news.
It's like you got four big dicks in the room, so who's gonna fucking slap this shit down first?
Brought to you by Satanic International Network.
Okay, wait a minute. Hold on. See, here's the problem. Let's try this again.
Brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the news.
I'm on the stage, every foul wicked spirit in the host, the news.
20 minutes, that door of the day, on the news, right now.
On the news, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
They kind of missed the whole point.
To really tap into the adversarial current
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Damn it all. It started off wrong intro. That pisses me off. I'm slowly but surely ironing out the bugs of this. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to delete everything beyond what we're currently using. I had kept the other stuff on there in the past, so that, you know, during moments when we maybe were out of things to talk about, we wanted to compare and contrast things, we could actually play it, but, fuck it. Anyway.
Yeah, Blog Talk Radio is kind of a bitch, man. I've had similar technical issues on my own blog, my own BTR too, man.
Right, but I'm paying for this shit, man, so it should be like, you know, should be stroking my shit, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, man, you would think it would run seamlessly when you're paying, you know, when you have a premium BTR, but apparently a BTR doesn't really care. It just likes to fuck people in the ass.
Right on. Well, anyway, thanks, folks, for tuning in. My name's T.C. Downey, and this is my co-host, Zach Black. What's going on, my man?
Oh, it's another beautiful day in sunny San Diego. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I just kind of still chuckling about the fact that you got roughed up by two chicks last night.
Yeah, man. I was sitting there, man. I wasn't doing anything. I was minding my own business. Got took a piss, came back, and the bar part was full. And man, I don't know what happened when I was in the bathroom. I mean, I was probably only in taking a piss for, you know, 1 or 2 minutes, and I came back out and sat between these girls, and there's two Native girls, and there's one white girl, and the Native girls, the smaller one, reached around me, pulled the white girl who had long hair off her bar stool, dropped her on her head. And I still have my beer in my hand, so I'm just looking around like, you know, okay, did this just happen? And then the Native girl stood up and kicked her in the side of the face like a soccer ball. And at that point, I was just like, I mean, the girl's already crying. She's already defeated. It's like, okay, you know, is that really necessary? And she was going to do it again, so I stepped up, tried to get between them. I got punched in the face by the smaller Pocahontas. I'm just going to call her Pocahontas because I'm an asshole. I don't really know her name. The Native girl, she punched me in the face, and it was more like a slap. You know, I was kind of stunned because I wasn't expecting to get punched in the face. And then the bigger one, who was all of 250 pounds, came around the side and threw a punch at me, and I saw that one coming. That one out, and I'm kind of prepared for it. She punched me in the ear. And then I grabbed the bigger one to punch me because that was the one that actually hurt, and I pushed her down pretty forcefully. And some dude came up behind me and just grabbed me and put me in a chokehold and started dragging me out the door. I don't know if he was an employee or a customer or a friend that I didn't see or that was with them or what, started dragging me out the door, and but it wasn't like a headlock. It was a chokehold, man, and my only reaction was to try to get out of it. And there was a set of hallway, and there was this giant fucking glass aquarium. It was like, I don't know, probably 6 to 8 feet long, like 2 to 3 feet high. Big-ass aquarium, man, and I kicked my feet off the side of the wall adjacent to the aquarium, and we both hit the aquarium. And, you know, well, the aquarium broke, fucking water all over the place, $1,000 of the damage probably. There's fucking exotic fish dying on the floor. And he let me go. And I just fucking got out of there. It was like fight or flight. I thought about fucking punching the guy in the face, but I was like, nah, cops are coming any fucking second. I'm fucking out of here. So I bounced that. Yeah, well, that was my experience last night.
Wow, man. That's just crazy. And through all of this, you forgot your bicycle, too. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I didn't forget it, man, but I didn't want to dick around trying to find my keys and have that big motherfucker who put me in a headlock get up, because he was thinking about getting up, but I got up first, and I looked him in the eye, and there was, like, that subtle communication, like, okay, you know, I was, like, telepathic. If you get up, I'm going to punch you in the face really hard. And he didn't. He sat there in the water with fish around him. And I just bounced. I left my fucking bike there. I was like, okay, the bike costs $60. The lock costs $20. To get out of jail will cost me several hundreds. Fuck it.
Right on.
I haven't ran that far and long since I was like in high school and I had to go to PE, man. But I pretty much ran home and almost died of an asthma attack. But I made it home.
Well, I'm glad you made it back safely. So,
Well,
last night you also decided to choose the Church of Satan as tonight's topic, right? So you just were on a roll last night.
Yeah. I did pick the Church of Satan as a topic. I figured, you know, there's a lot of people have an interest in the Church of Satan and what's going on, and basically, my experience with the Church of Satan, I joined the Church of Satan in 1994 when I was 18. And when I joined, what happened was I got this pamphlet back. It was like a psychological, it was more than a pamphlet, it was like a small little booklet. And it was, there was like 40 questions ranging from like, you know, what's your favorite color to if you had 3 wishes, what would they be? You know, describe Satan. It was kind of a psychological questionnaire. I filled that out, and they also asked for pictures of yourself for some reason. I don't know why, but they did, and so I gave them pictures, mailed that shit back in, and they mailed me something back that was something to the effect of, well, you seem to have a good grasp on Satanism. Oh, and I got my red card, too. Yeah, they mailed that, too. And, of course, I had to pay them $100, but they mailed that back, and they said, you have a good grasp on Satanism. We'd like to consider you a spokesperson in the area
here
where you live. What's that?
Oh, I haven't said anything, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got an echo on my end. Yeah, so they mailed me back something, and it said, we'd like to consider you to be a spokesperson, and please send us a VHS copy of yourself talking about Satanism. We want to see how well you can articulate yourself on film, you know, and in person. And at the time when I was 18, I was delivering pizzas. And back in 94, this is before CDs and, you know, DVDs, before the internet, VHS camcorders were big fucking money, man. That was expensive, man. They were probably several hundreds of dollars. And I just, because of the cost, I was like, nah, I'm okay, I'm cool. And I corresponded with Peter Gilmore a couple times. One, because I ordered the Black Flame and the Cloven Hoof, the newsletters for the Church of Satan, and I didn't get them. I got, like, parts of them, pieces of them, but I didn't get what I paid for, and so I bitched about it, and Peter Gilmore wrote me back and said something weird, like, maybe your mom is screening your mail. He said something like that, and Peter Gilmore signed the letter Beast Wishes, which I think you'd probably find that funny, Beast. But yeah, I signed it Beast Witches. And he also got a a piece of paper with three phone numbers on it, because I requested to be in contact with the Grotto system that was still up and running at the time in my area of Phoenix, Arizona. And I got San Diego, and I got three phone numbers, and two of them were disconnected, and another one, I contacted the dude. His name was JD. Dude was like the most arrogant, pompous, retarded, dumbass I had ever met, man. He looked like Glenn Danzig. He was this dude, and he came, and I met him at a bar, and he wore fishnets and stuff like that. And he played pool, and he, like, slopped in the eight ball, right? And then it was, like, an impossible shot. He fucking totally slopped it. And I was like, oh, I win. He was like, oh, I meant to do that. I'm like, no, you fucking didn't, dude. And that's basically, I've been like a handful of people from the Church of Satan. And my experience with the church, people from the Church of Satan, and I'm not going to, you know, stereotype everybody from the Church of Satan, but my experience has been they're a bunch of arrogant fucking douchebags. You know, that's been my experience, my personal experience.
T, did you lose a piercing?
Right on. Hang on just one second, dude.
Tell that bitch you can take a break. So what else have I done? I'll carry this.
Missing a piercing?
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know, man. Like, and Anton LaVey died in 1997. I actually went to San Francisco on, there's a death in the family, and I went to San Francisco, and I thought, you know, because I was a member of the Church of Satan, this is back when Anton LaVey was alive, I probably went there in 95, 96. I figured that, you know, I could, like, knock on the Black House and Anton LaVey's house, and it would just be like, hey, yeah, what's up? Hey, Zach, here's the beer. How you doing? And I went there, and lo and behold, barbed wire fence around the fucking Black House. I figured, oh, fuck it. You know, I'm a member of the Church of Satan. They must know me. You know, I was young. I was like 19. I threw my leather jacket over the barbed wire fence, and I climbed the fence. I walked up to the front door, and I knocked on the door. And, there's like a little window next to the door type thing, and a woman's voice, I couldn't see who it was, a woman's voice said, what do you want? I said, I'd like to speak to Anton LaVey. And the voice said something, I don't remember exactly, it was like, well, why? And then she walked off or left. I kept knocking on the door, and then a man's voice came from behind the door, and I don't know if it was Anton LaVey or not. It was somebody. And said, what do you want? Why are you here? I said, I'm here to speak to Anton LaVey. And the voice said, Anton LaVey doesn't see people without an appointment. I said, well, can I make an appointment? And he goes, yeah, you can make an appointment with my two Doberman pinchers if you don't get the fuck out of here. I was like, all right. So I left as quick as I came. And I pretty much haven't had any contact with the Church of Satan after that.
Right. Well, for a long time, I understand that, actually up until the conception of Satanic International Network, you were still a card-carrying member of the Church of Satan. You know, with that greeting that you had and that, what do I want to use, distancing that was used, what made you decide to continue to be a member of the Church of Satan?
Well, what made me decide to be to continue, I think are you asking why I didn't resign earlier? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, basically laziness and also ego. I thought maybe, you know, with my limited YouTube success and whatnot, that possibly, you know, somebody from the Church of Satan would say, hey, Zach, you know, hey, why don't you be a spokesperson? But I was never reached out to. I never got the recognition that I thought that I should have. So a lot of it was ego, and a lot of it was laziness. I didn't know exactly how to resign. And I figured that, you know, resigning was, I mean, there was no contact anyway, so it was kind of like, you know, a dead boat in the water. So it's like, eh. But I remember something that they sent me when I first signed up that said, if you do something, if you represent Satanism, on your own accord, you have to give the Church of Satan credit for it. you have to give us, you know, props or something like that, basically is what they were saying. And I personally don't feel like I should give people to ignore me. I don't ever contributed. So I was like, well, fuck it. Fuck you guys then. Also, the Church of Satan is just not really what it was when LaVey was around. They're kind of, in my opinion, they're kind of defunct. They're kind of obsolete now that the Internet's here. There's really no need for an organization to connect you to other people now that we have the Internet and to distribute information. So the Church of Satan took a pretty heavy blow when the Internet came out, as did many satanic organizations. But the Church of Satan specifically, I think when LaVey died, people were, you know, jostling and wrestling around for the hierarchy there. They really lost that niche when the Internet came out in, you know, late 90s, and that's when LaVey died. I think they fucked up. I think they really fucked up. And instead of, you know, where they were there arguing for who's going to be the high priest and who's going to do this and where are we going to move and all this bullshit, they really lost that niche, and a lot of people came forward to represent Satanism. Outside of the Church of Satan, you know, and now you have, like, people like Boyd Rice, I guess recently, what's that dude's name, Rex Church, you know, who resigned, or who's, you know, who's been a thorn in the side for the Church of Satan now, coming forward, yeah, it's bullshit, it's just a bunch of fucking paper pushers, pencil nerds, and armchair occultists who don't do anything.
Right on. Well, I mean, it's actually really interesting that that's the exact verbiage that Boyd Rice himself tried to, well, not tried to, but used in his recent reclaiming of the throne of the Church of Satan. I don't see that there's anything actually incorrect in terms of that assessment. I mean, as far as I've seen, in terms of the Church of Satan, most of the time you get this overbloated, egotistical pretentiousness, and, you know, trying to masquerade as being, I don't know, more intelligent than they actually are. Like, the, you know, the Dark Lord somehow gave them extra special powers.
Yeah, well, you know, what bothers me the most about the Church of Satan is their attitude that if you're not part of the Church of Satan, you're not really a Satanist. And that's what I really strongly disagree with. I think the majority of Satanists, I mean, by you know, just by the very nature of Satanism, are independent and don't look to join a collective herd, which is what the Church of Satan has become. And, you know, it's no coincidence that Peter Gilmore doubled the price of the membership fees when LaVey died. I mean, it's a money-making scheme that, you know, that was pretty clever. And that's pretty much what it's, I think, come down to in modern day after LaVey died, is just paying Peter Gilmore's rent.
Well, I'm actually, and I'm going to for just a second so I can hear myself think over your wind. I actually, I'm under the impression that the Church of Satan itself was Anton LaVey's biggest poke at organized religion. I think that, you know, he kind of was making the joke that he could have a herd of non-followers or a group of non-joiners.
Yeah, man, I can totally see that. I don't think LaVey anticipated what was going to happen. And I don't think LaVey actually, I think LaVey kind of joked, yeah, about the church structure, the hierarchy. I don't think that was what LaVey was all about. I think that's what it turned out to be when LaVey died. But I don't think LaVey was, from what I hear, LaVey was encouraged to make this, to promote Satanism and to make money. And he did reluctantly. That's what I've been told. I don't know if that's actually truth or not. But I don't think that LaVey intended it to be a fucking a group or a organization of non-joiners, basically.
I don't know. I mean, I'm with on this. You know, LeVay had his magic circle long before he actually had the Church of Satan's official body. You know, and there was no real hierarchy. There was no real, you know, structure to it, from my understanding. It was a free-form exchange of ideas between some of San Francisco's best occult minds at that time. You know, and somebody brought up the fact that, you know, it would be marketable to promote the devil's own, so to speak. You know,
yeah, you know, it's weird, man, because it's like, no one really knows exactly how it formed out, but yeah, I know what you're talking about. I mean, well, they had the Order of the Trapezoid or the Circle of Nine or something like that, and somebody whispered in his ear, "Hey, dude, you can make some money here," and he tried, and he did. Unfortunately, he didn't make nearly as much money as he probably should have. I mean, I think the Satanic Bible sold like 8 or 9 million copies, you know, and somehow he got fucked out of that deal because LeVay died, I wouldn't say a broke man, but he was definitely not wealthy, you know, I mean, he was struggling, and, you know, the Black House got torn down. I mean, I think somebody said, from what I've read, that LeVay sold the rights to the Satanic Bible for $50,000, which, you know, in the 60s is a lot of fucking money, and, you know, if... You know, you're, you know, unemployed or, you know, you're from between jobs or whatever you want to call it, $50,000, like, wow, I could, that all set me up for a couple of years in the 60s, you know, and, yeah, and I think he kind of got screwed. I mean,
right on. Well, are you still on the line here? Yeah, you are. Okay.
Yeah, I'm online.
It got quiet. There was no wind background, so it kind of messed me up for a minute there, man. But what's kind of interesting to me is I truly believe that LeVay was under the impression when he first started this out that you could actually make a living as an occult writer.
Yeah, that's interesting because, I mean... You know, and I think Jason King actually mentioned, like, if you're hoping to, you know, make money off your occult books, you know, you're delusional because it's never going to fucking happen. I mean, if LeVay can do it, I don't, and King can't do it, you know, I don't think that there's just not enough fucking Satanists in the world, you know. I mean, I would speculate 50,000 to 100,000. to make any money doing pretty much anything, you know? I mean, you're pretty much, you know, don't quit your fucking day job, basically.
Right on. Well, I mean, to be frank and honest, there seems to be a pretty solid divide between what Satanism is at all anyways. Some people classify it as a religion, and in my opinion, sort of wrongly so. I think it's more of a life philosophy than it is an actual religion. It's actually the religion of being a point of religion, you know, and the life philosophy of being, you know, the opposite side of the coin, the other end of the spectrum, you know?
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, I don't see Satanism as a religion. In fact, it's probably the anti-religion, if anything. It revolves around the self, around the individual, which has always bothered me that the Church of Satan would call themselves a church. And I, from my understanding, I think it's meant to be blasphemous. You know, it's meant to be a rub in the nose of organized religion. But Satanism as a whole, I think, is moving back towards the individual, away from organizations. I mean, you don't necessarily need to spend $200 to get a red card and have some grand poobah Church of Satan or any other organization say, okay, now you're a Satanist. Thanks. You know, I think real Satanists are figuring this out and know that it's all about the self. It's all about what you do. It's about your personal lifestyle choices. It's a lifestyle. It's not a religion. Most of us. A religion to me means you worship and you pray, and you go to church, and I think at the time, when LeVay did that, the timing was right, and it was beneficial. But right now, you know, I think it's just there's no need for it. I think it's pretty much obsolete.
Right on. Well, I'm trying real quick here, man, figure out. Actually, no, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to call into the show and then switch over to my phone real quick so I can go out and have a cigarette while we're talking about this. In the meantime, if anybody has anything they want to add, anything we've discussed at this point, or, you know, we want to get into, you know, maybe bringing up or asking Zach some other questions about his residency in the Church of Satan. Give us a call, 347-989-1371.
You know, when I resigned from the Church of Satan in October. Actually, I resigned on Halloween of last year, of 2010. I pretty much just resigned because it was, well, again, it was just unnecessary. The Church of Satan didn't do anything for me. You know, as much as I've tried to promote the Church of Satan, I just didn't see the point anymore. I really didn't see the point of being a member in a stagnant organization. That's, you know, kind of a fallacy anyway. I mean, it was just, it didn't make any sense. It just wasn't, I didn't want to be part of something that wasn't being productive, you know. I wanted to, my whole intention for joining the Church of Satan was, one, my admiration for Anton LaVey, which I still have, and two, to meet other Satanists. And when LaVey died, and then I met one Satanist who was a fucking retard, I was pretty much disenchanted with the whole idea behind the Church of Satan. I kind of felt duped a little bit. And then when I tried to subscribe to the Black Flame and the Cloven Hoof, and I got, you know, I got half of what I paid for, it was just like, what the fuck, you know? I mean, I was a little bit of LaVey idol worship going on when I was 18. But, you know, when LaVey died, that was pretty much it. I just kind of lost interest. I mean, it wasn't really anything going on. And it's interesting that Boyd Rice, you know, released his statement. Because it really tells you about, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Boyd Rice. I like what he does. I get it. A lot of people don't get Boyd Rice, but I get what he's doing. And it's interesting for him to, you know, basically tell the Church of Satan publicly, fuck you.
Yeah, I think it's it definitely speaks volumes for, you know, the state the organization is now in. If you think sometime in the, you know, 80s, even early 90s, Boyd Rice was like, you know, he was the guy you saw on TV talking about Satanism, you know?
He was definitely a spokesperson for the Church of Satan. And you know what's interesting is, like, you know, people like Marilyn Manson have come on board with the Church of Satan or whatever, Reverend Thomas Thorne from, like, the Hellfire Club. More specifically, Marilyn Manson. What's interesting about that dude Marilyn Manson has probably drove more people to Satanism than even Anton LaVey. I mean, if he might be riding shotgun with Anton LaVey, but Marilyn Manson himself, whether people like his music or not, or people think he's a poser or a joker or whatever, has driven more interest into Satanism than I can think of anybody else next to LaVey.
Good. But Brian Warner, which I think is what his real name is, if I remember right. But Brian Warner is definitely a sharp character, and, you know, he has a flair for the dramatic, much like LaVey did. So it would make sense in a more modern, more accepting context that he would have a bigger impact than the original guru of damnation did, you know?
Yeah, you know, it cracks me up, man. I've made a couple of YouTube videos about Marilyn Manson. And I've cut and pasted some videos about Manson, and so a lot of people to this day are like, Marilyn Manson is not a Satan. You know, but,
you know, but
really? Really? You really think
really
so?
Think
I mean,
so.
You've
got,
I mean,
pictures
of Manson all the day. I got really bad echo on my end, by the way.
It should be all better now.
Okay. Yeah, I don't hear it anymore. Yeah, it's a, people say Brian Warner, Marilyn Manson is not a Satanist. It's like, okay, so what? You got pictures of Anton LaVey. He's been he's a reverend in the Church of Satan, an honorary title. It's like, listen to his music. I mean, he wrote the introduction to Satan Speaks, which is LaVey's last book. There's a chapter in Marilyn Manson's biography about Anton LaVey and the Church of Satan. It's like, come on, you really think this guy's not a Satanist? You guys really are still going to hold on to this? And of course they do, because, well, they don't understand Satanism. They like Marilyn Manson, so they're going to try to disassociate Satanism and Marilyn Manson. But it's very clear and obvious that he is a Satanist.
Right, I agree. I agree with that. I think even if he were to drop the banner, if he were to quit carrying that banner himself, just his own activities, his own manifestation in his real life still hold him to being such. You know, you don't necessarily have to carry the flag to actually be someone of what I would consider satanic virtue. So...
Right, you know, it's no surprise. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I didn't say anything, man.
Oh, shit, I got bad echo, man. I can't tell if it's you or me talking. It's no surprise that when Marilyn Manson started making millions of dollars and got famous, that he might have dropped a couple comments to kind of disassociate himself with Satanism because, well, let's think about it. I mean, think about it realistically. If you're trying to make money... You know, you can't be waving the flag of Satanism around too long. You know, you have to drop that if you're going to expect to make any money and to attract a greater audience of people. Because you don't want to, you don't want to alienate a large portion of the population, which is what you will do if you hold the banner of Satanism up.
Right, just by default. So, I mean... where he took advantage of the fact that there was the satanic panic going on. You know, once it died, it no longer suited his purpose to continue to carry the banner, so dropping the banner was probably the smartest move for him career-wise.
You know, David Bowie, and actually the Rolling Stones did that too. When they came out, you know, in 1966, when the Church of Satan was established, they created an album called Their Satanic Majesty's Request. And they were dressed like kind of a cultist. It was kind of a mock of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Club album or whatever. The Stones dropped that too. But, you know, they're still Satanists, or somebody is over there. And, you know, in 1969, the year the Satanic Bible was released, Mick Jagger wrote the song with Keith Richards' Sympathy for the Devil. And also Mick Jagger did the soundtrack for Kenneth Anger's Lucifer's Rising. Actually, no, I'm sorry. It's Invocation to My Demon Brother. And they were in that movie, that short film that Kenneth Anger produced, which was one of the founding members of the Church of Satan, part of the Inner Circle, Inner Circle of Nine, or Order of Trapezoid, whatever it was called. So there's a lot of occultists in music, but when they start to really take off, they disassociate, you know, themselves from Satanism because, well, they want to make money. That's what Satanism is all about. It's about the self, right? It's not about the person of Church of Satan. It's about succeeding in your life in your own personal way.
Right on. Right on. Well,
so
I mean, go ahead.
What's that? So, what, have you ever joined any organizations, any satanic organizations yourself, other than the Cult of Cthulhu?
Actually, yeah, back in, I think it was 2003, 2004, somewhere in there, there was a group called the United Order of Cerberus. The premise behind the group was basically to focus on, they said unity, but what it was really more about was tolerance for different ideologies of Satanism, you know. Up until that point, there was, and there still is today, a very big contrast between what would be considered LaVeyan Satanism and what might be considered theistic Satanism. And, you know, the group kind of sought out to kind of... I'm sorry, that wind's got me so distracted. I'm having a hard time finishing my thought here, man.
Sorry, man. I'm actually moving to a different spot that's less windy, but I'm still trying to find a spot that I actually have reception. That's the trick here.
Yeah, it's all good, man. I'm just, I got derailed a little bit.
Okay, I can put my finger over the button to mute myself. So go ahead, what were you saying?
Yeah. Oh, the idea behind this group was that, you know, you could get a certain level of coexistence to happen without actually having to all believe in the exact same damn thing. The group itself was a success, but to a kind of a mute point, if I can put it that way. And by that, what I mean is that, you know, all of the people that signed up, and there were over 5,000 members when this group closed 5 years later. But what had happened was that there was nothing left for anybody to talk about. Everybody was so busy with the I'm okay, you're okay bullshit that, you know, there were no more exchanging of ideas. And I really think that that's a very distinguishing feature of what Satanism really is.
Right on.
So, yeah, that would be one organization that I did join up with. Other than that, none. There's Cult of Cthulhu, couple of local covens, but those weren't focused on Satanism. That was more to do with esoteric philosophy and magic than it was anything else. So,
what's your thoughts on magic and ritual? Do you perform ritual, and do you think there's any value to it?
Yes, I do perform ritual, and yes, I believe there's a lot of value to it. There's something about getting yourself completely into the role and character, and then from there focusing yourself with all intent on whatever it is that you desire that is effective. It doesn't really matter, you know, what the drapery is surrounding it. I guess if you wanted to be, you know, Queen My Little Pony with your rainbow bright magic wand and get into a ritual chamber, as long as you wholeheartedly put enough into it, you will gain psychologically as well as some different understandings of the way the world goes. I look at it as being I'm sorry, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're kind of breaking up, but I think it's on my end, not yours. I'm trying to move to a less windy spot, but unfortunately the 20 spots are between big buildings, which cuts into my cell phone reception. I heard most of what you said. Do you think ritual is anything other than psychodrama? I mean, do you think that there's a way? I mean, if, I don't know, do you think there's something more to it than psychodrama? Do you think you can actually tap into some force to promote your will?
Well, since you're asking me if I think, then the answer would be yes. Can I prove, or do I have reason to believe? No. But experience has shown me that, basically that energy, you know, by energy I mean, you know, the energy that's exerted through personal emotions or whatever, does have a very unique reciprocation that happens to it when it's placed in the world. I guess it's like the question of, you know, does it feel good for you to pet your pet as much as it feels good for your pet to be petted? And the answer is probably yes. It's, you know, stimulation happens regardless.
Well, that's true. I understand that. Yeah, I mean, if it makes you feel better, then it's effective. You know, regardless if there's an actual end result, if the only result is that you liberate yourself from whatever emotions you're trying to deliver, then Yeah, I guess that's effective, and I guess that would be called psychodrama, right? But I guess
right.
It's still under the umbrella of ritual.
Right. To an extent, that's what I'm saying. But what I'm more saying to you is that there are things about nature, things about reality that we don't yet understand as man. I mean, mankind does this really funny, pretentious thing. We pretend like, you know, we've already got all the answers when, I mean, really, we're not much further from clueless than we were 200 years ago. You know, we don't realize that different things play different roles. I mean, haven't you ever walked into a room where everybody's been arguing and they've stopped now, but they've been arguing prior to that a couple of hours. But when you walk into the room, you can actually feel the tension in the room. Zach? Shit, I lost him. Anybody care to call in and talk to me on this? I mean, even if you have an opposing point of view, be really neat to kind of exchange. It's a little better than talking about corpses. So, no, 347-989-1371. Anybody? Takers? No? Frenchie? Dan? A la Prima? Let's see who else is here. We got Family Eternal. I don't know who you are, but I'm bringing Zach back on. Zach.
Hello.
Hey.
What's up?
All right.
God hates us, Steve. God hates us, man. He keeps dropping me.
Well, of course he's going to hate us.
I know.
Looks like we've actually got Warlock Asylum on the line, so let me bring him on.
Hey, what's happening?
What's going on,
what's up, man?
All right, how you doing, Zach? How's everything?
Good, man. Good. Enjoying the sun and the fun.
Yeah. Yeah, we're cold up, P. I was just working on the stuff you sent up, Beast, so I have that pretty much up. I wanted to get it up before the day was out, you know, before the show started today, but this work is just crazy, you know what I mean? So, yeah, sorry. But I was just listening to, like, the deal on the magic ritual and stuff like that, you know what I mean? So I've kind of always looked at that stuff in some ways as a little bit scientific, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's just that I've always looked at not so much deities as like some kind of, like in the way Christians look at Jesus, but just more or less like forces of influence around the environment, you know what I'm saying? And I guess that, you know, since we got like a lot of energy in us, we can stretch that back, you know, and try to work with that life force energy a little bit, you know, and get things moving around in our own way of building up a psychodrama, like television, influence, you know. So,
yeah.
I can totally feel that. Yeah, I don't think, like, I mean, some people get into it, like, in a superstitious way. I guess that's where you get, like, more like the Wiccan and, like, some of that other philosophy. But I believe that person practice a left-hand path with Satanists, they can definitely work with the magical arts deeply, you know, as long as they keep in mind that, you know, it's a way to affect subtly, you know, change on some level and then go out in the day and just do what they need to do to make it happen. That's all. You know,
it's balancing. It's interesting because, you know, I mean, ultimately we're all just stupid monkeys, you know, but at the same time, and there are forces greater than us, and there are unknown forces, but whether we can impose our will on these forces is an entirely different story. I'm skeptical. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm skeptical. But I do believe in like the collective unconsciousness and stuff like that, and synchronicity.
Yeah.
So there is something to it, but I don't know if it's if doing ritual actually can influence it. But that's just me personally.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's just also just paying attention. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, there is some things I do think strongly influence. I mean, I've experienced a lot of different stuff over the years, you know. So, but I try not to get caught up in that flower child shit. You know what I'm saying? You know, like that yuppie stuff. That's not me. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let me just do what I need to do, and then go out and try to make it happen in a day. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? So that's how I kind of look at. Kind of look at that, you know. But there's always room for exploration in that field, you know. Yeah, there's always like room for that. Just together. Yeah. So.
Yeah, man. There's definitely there's something in the background, but I don't know who the director is, and I'm not really sure. I'm not really convinced that we can motivate it or influence it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something that sets this wall in motion. And there is something to it. I mean, there is, I want to call it a creator, but there is definitely some sort of force that's probably indifferent, and we probably can't affect it. But,
yeah.
It's hard to say, man. It's all speculative, right? Because, again, we're just stupid monkeys, so.
Yeah. It's just, it seems like we're learning some things, and then some things we're still back on, you know? So, it just takes time. I guess everyone could just make what happened, what they want to see happen as reality as best as they can, you know. And that's pretty much all you can do. You know, that's how I look at it, you know, like let me just try to make this happen and just keep it moving, you know, and try to learn as much as I can on the way, on the same instance as well, you know. But, yeah, I do think there are some forces that are, like, at work behind the scenes, just like, you know, to me, magic was always really about, magic and occultism was always about the emotional body, you know, the emotional body and the thoughts. And I think it was like a way of measuring that. Like you get like a desire to do something, you get up and do it. It's not so much based on logic, but it's just maybe something in your psyche that's triggering like, hey, you know, I want to go to the refrigerator and get this beer, or, you know, I want to do, you know, something of that nature. So I think it's a way of measuring those things, you know, like behind the matter a little bit. And trying to be able to use that to control that. You know, like I know you mentioned earlier about psychodrama, you know, and which is used a lot in Satanism. And I've always looked at that same effect like with television and advertising. You know, saying someone puts on a little makeup, maybe puts on a costume, lights, put on the camera, and then they send that signal out, that emotional signal. I definitely believe that's a science, you know, behind that, you know. And the more effectively a person can get into that mood, you know, they can make change happen. It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. So, get this.
Well, you know, it's interesting about reality is that we all have a different perspective on reality. Your reality is not the same as mine.
Mm-hmm.
My reality is not the same as Pizzino's.
Yeah.
And whatever works for the individual seems to be the most productive. You know, and if a ritual works for you, if it causes the end result that you want, which is to, you know, void yourself or, you know, deliver emotion, well, hey, then I guess it works, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so for some people, yeah, it's what it is, you know. Like you said, everyone has a different, they absorb a little bit something different from reality, you know, so, and how it works with them. So it's just whatever works best. That's how I see it, you know what I'm saying? Yeah,
we're like, what's your thoughts on like an afterlife? Do you think that we're reincarnated, or do you think that we go somewhere, or do you think, what do you think? Say we're in the dirt or worm food?
Wow. I don't think that people like go to heaven. I think people may live out a little bit of their imagination a little bit, you know what I'm saying? A little bit of their imagination. And then I think that may dissipate, you know what I'm saying? I think that may dissipate. And then, you know, this past life, I'm not too much of, I don't really believe in that, the past life and the reincarnation so much. You know, I do think there's a progression of things. I was kind of like into, I was reading up a little bit on fourth way thought. I kind of like where they were coming from with it. They had a thing called recurrence, and then they had a thing called reincarnation. You know what I mean? And all that kind of thing. But I think when the person goes, they go. You know what I'm saying? Unless they can kind of work themselves up into things like astral projection and out-of-body things of that nature. I think other than that, that's that person, once they go on the ground, that's it. You know what I'm saying? It's, you know, the memory keeps the person alive. Like, you know, people hold on to, like, the family and stuff like that. Then maybe that consciousness may survive a little bit longer. You know, a lot of times it dissipates and people think they have past life regressions because they catch someone else's consciousness, fragments of the shit, you know. But I can't, I don't know, I haven't really explored that to fully answer that question. All I can say is that when you close your eyes, that's pretty much about it, you know. I've read a lot, like, with the ancient mysteries and mythologies on it, you know, where there is, like, a definite, like, progression of spirits, and I guess it kind of breaks down to the personality is almost zero, you know. When I speak to people into reincarnation, I'm like, well, if you can't remember who you were in the past lifetime, then how you expect to prove in the next life? You know, this will make sense to me, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Christians is like, you know, the wage of sin plays is death, so how are you going to experience forgiveness? You understand what I'm saying? So I've heard some real credible stories, you know, about, you know, what, you know, people can do, like, in some interesting, who are skilled occultists and stuff. But I think it's like a DVD. I think the movie just goes round and round and round when the stars line up the way they are now. Some people can get out of it, you know. To me, reincarnation, the word means to go back. I know how, you know, how people associate with going forward, you know what I mean? So I've always thought of things like that as coming from a place that's timeless. You know, I've seen, you know, like, certain things happen to my own life, like, you know, my mother passed years ago, and I've seen, you know, her, like, impress in dreams, you know, like, certain messages and stuff like that. So how long that lasts, whatever the case may be, I don't put a lot of faith into it. I just try to build my energy up now, you know. But I know. Yeah, I'm sorry, brother. Go ahead.
No, man, for sure, man. And I think that's what Satan is all about, of the here and now. Like, we'll never be able to answer these questions about where we're going, you know, why are we here, where we come from.
Yeah.
Those questions are going to elude us probably, you know, the entire span of human civilization. But, yeah, it's about the here and now, but there's definitely something that we are in an energetic being. There is a life force of some sort, but I think when you die, you don't go anywhere specific. You just go out.
Yeah.
And I think the best way I could describe it is that maybe your essence, you know, dare I call it a soul, is more just an energy force that gets redistributed back into the whole.
Yeah.
That's the best I can come up with.
Yeah, I can kind of feel that, because that's a good philosophy, and it's what it is anyway, you know what I'm saying? Because sometimes when people concentrate too much on that, it takes away from the enjoyment of the present life, the here and now today, you know what I'm saying? You know, so much beauty, things could be beautiful, you know, in day-to-day life, if people just focus on that, you know what I'm saying? That's a choice everyone makes, you know, but that's how I kind of perceive it, you know? Yeah. So, I'm just getting this thing ready to post off in the meantime.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, what's your thoughts, Beast?
What's my guess in terms of what happens after?
I don't know. Have you been listening to the show at all? What's your thought? You want to take over this train or what?
Well, what I was actually sitting here contemplating in myself was what he was referring to with the fourth way understanding of it, and that is that you know, the soul is mortal unless you do something to make it not so. You know, so my view is that you know you're born and you go into the dirt, and you know, unless you've had some found some secret magical way to preserve your essence, you're done. Yeah. So.
Well, do you think your essence is preserved just in the memories of loved ones and the impact that you make, or do you think there's some sort of energetic impression, some impression you can make on the universe as a whole?
Well,
somehow the dark forces will wink at you and push you back into the limelight.
Everything that, as I understand it, everything that's living has some kind of a bioelectrical signal that it gives off. So that to me indicates that what animates us, what makes us actually being rather than just a thing, that right there would be what would have to be somehow preserved, your own energy signature. I think that it's a wonderful thought that, you know, your friends and your works will carry on for you forever, and that's your afterlife, but it's nothing more than a sugar-coated fairy tale from what I can tell.
I have to agree, man. I think that the whole thing of the afterlife was, I think what happened was man walked out of the jungle, you know, I don't know what, 50,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, walked out of the jungle into the open field, into the open plain, and realized, fuck, I'm all alone. You know, what do I got? You know, and we needed to turn our faith into emotional blankets, is the thought of an afterlife. Yeah, we don't want to be alone. We want to think that we're going to live on. We see our brothers and our loved ones and our friends die around us. So we created these fairy tales to help comfort us in time of need, you know, as an emotional blanket type sort of deal.
Sure, and where I'll give that... Well, I'll give that a lot of precedent and a lot of credit. What I will say is that if we could find a way to extend this electrical current that animates our body, then, you know, it is possible that we could extend the life force. So,
you know, what's interesting, man, is when I worked as a mechanic, I worked as a mechanic for about 5 or 6 years. If you set a voltmeter on its most sensitive setting, you can take the positive and electrical probes, hold them in each hand, and if you squeeze them, it actually reads your electrical current, which is interesting because it actually proves that you are alive or you are producing energy. Your body produces energy and it actually reads it, and we have this machine that does it.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah, I look at the fact I've been studying like a little bit of astronomy lately, you know, and I look at like, okay, there's like 100,000 million stars in the galaxy, and there's millions of galaxies out here. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like afterlife is interesting. It's interesting. I know, like even like in Taoism, the original Taoists before it got mixed in with the Buddhism and all that kind of stuff, they were more under the impression of like, when you die, you die, you know, but there are certain work that you can do that you have to do while you're alive if you want to extend that. You know what I'm saying? And they pretty much was on the philosophy, like other afterlife theories were just more or less like ways to kind of keep the poor, you know, like ways to keep people in a level of contentment where they was at in life. You know? So, yeah, it's interesting. But the law of survival is the highest, so...
Oh, you know, for sure. And I think that's why Christianity took off so big was, you know, you can tell people that the majority of people that are peasants and are poor and are starving and are struggling, you can tell them, hey, you know what, it's okay. It's okay because this life is just temporary. You have everlasting kingdom of heaven. You have everlasting indulgence, you know, everything you ever want, so long as you pray to my Lord, which happened to be ruled by the church and the government at the time. So it's easy to see how that got, you know, started.
they definitely kind of, you know, dumbed a lot of stuff down. You know what I mean? They definitely dumbed a lot of stuff down, and it was just like a way to kind of just perpetrate and just keep people content as they control shit. You know, I have been working on this book a little bit, kind of dealing with some thoughts, and you know, some of the Christian stuff is just like they just watered down mad shit, you know what I'm saying? Watered it down, distorted it. Like some of it does have a premise, you know what I'm saying? In ancient mythology, but of course, you know, but the way they watered that stuff down and everything, it was just like, it was disgusting.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, okay, you know what I mean? But, yeah, that machine is broke. The foundation is lost. And, you know, Christianity is definitely a disservice to the community today. So,
you know what's interesting about Christianity is, like, The fuck was that? Thank you. Come again. Fucking. You know, when I just distracted my whole train of thought. Oh yeah, like 50 years ago, man. 50 years ago, Christianity was like, you know, it was massive. It had a large influence on the world. I don't think it has the same influence, at least in this country, Western civilization, as it did 50 years ago. Like 50 years ago, if you had, you know, sex before marriage, abortion was like unheard of, you know, shit like that.
You
go to church if you didn't wear a cross. And nowadays, it's almost like if you don't have sex before marriage, you're considered a prude. So the coin is, I wouldn't say the coin has been flipped, this idea, but it's definitely rolling on the edge, and I guess what we'll try to do is trying to push it to the other side.
And people just got, you know, they can see kind of like a lot of hypocrisy in the church and shit, you know what I'm saying? You know, like that came definitely out more in the 80s too, you know, like with the priests and all that sort of thing. But it was just like so much hypocrisy and, you know, like these reverends setting up big churches, you know, looting money and all that kind of stuff. And people just got tired of that nonsense, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's just like no integrity left in that system. Yeah, but that's out the way now. Christianity, I mean, living in New York, it's kind of like, I guess maybe it's because the circle of people I associate with. There's still some people with, like, the aesthetic of Christianity, but, like, the hardcore churchgoers and stuff, that's gone. You know, that's gone. So.
Well, you know what? That must be a coast-to-coast thing, man, because it's the same here. I'm in San Diego right now, but we're pretty close to L.A., which is probably the second-largest city in the country next to New York.
Okay.
It's the same thing, man. It's like a lot of people, if you ask, what do you believe? A lot of people will say, okay, yeah, I'm a Christian. Yeah. But nobody goes to church. Nobody does shit. Everybody's living their lives almost as a Satanist, but they still carry that identity because they were told to when they were kids.
Yeah. I definitely see that. Yeah, definitely see that. Yeah,
so,
definitely.
Yeah, so it's a coast to coast thing, man. It's a coast to coast thing. It's just we're in the West Coast too, man.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what's happening. And then too, there's like we have a lot of different people coming through the state. So it's a lot of different religious thought, a lot of different spiritual thought, and you know, people seeing things from a whole other different perspective now, which is good. You know, so it kind of helps open the mind up. Like a lot of different things, but I definitely see what you're saying. Like with the perspective, it's definitely satanic. But people have like a cover, you know, like they have this cover thing. I guess because they still want to please mommy and daddy. I don't know what it is. You know what I'm saying? But it's still like the same. So the deal, I guess they have a right to fill that out. You know. But
yeah, man, it's like a security blanket for them. It's like, you know, I'm going to live my life for me, but at the same time, if I believe in Jesus Christ, then I'm going to go to heaven. So, yeah, there you go. That's
yeah.
my belief.
Yeah. Yeah, take the easy way out.
Beast, what's your thoughts on that?
I can't say anything different than what you guys have been saying. It's pretty much... I don't know. I would consider it to be a given of anybody who's had any kind of time to think about this thing that they would come to those same conclusions.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's what's always interesting, man, is why do certain people, although, you know, maybe one out of 1,000 or one out of even 10,000, like we are, I mean, why do we come to this conclusion at a young age where it's like, this is ridiculous. This is not real. This is not reality. And why do the majority of people fucking just take off with it and, you know, still hold on to it? I don't understand that part. That psychology of religion, they need to believe.
I think it's the genetic a person has with them. You know what I mean? I've heard some theories about that before. Like, certain people just want to follow. You know what I'm saying? They want to follow. They want that responsibility, you know? It could be too... could be too mind-bending for them, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, it loops back to an interesting question of Satanism, or Satanists being born, not made. And that almost sounds too Nazi-ish, you know, too genetic. and I almost don't like to say that, but I think there is a hint of truth to that, where certain people are wired a certain way, and occasionally there's a fluke, there's a misfire, which in our genes, that makes us more skeptical, more logical, more intelligent, you know, and we just take off from there.
Yeah. There's a, I think Beast had mentioned something on one of the shows about the Rite of Cain, you know, and I think that's kind of where some people get it and some people don't, you know what I mean?
That's exactly what it is, what I was talking about was the serpent seed theory, actually, but it's the same thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some people get it and some people don't, you know. It's funny, Zach had brought up the Christianity thing, because I was talking to this lady the other day, and I was just like, well, I was thinking about the whole thing with Cain. I said, here's this guy, you know, like he kills his brother, you know what I'm saying, and then he goes and he's protected for the rest of his life.
Right on.
And he goes right back to the same place where God planned the Garden of Eden. So I said, what side of the coin are you missing in all of this? You know what I'm saying? Some people see that side. A lot of people miss that side. You know what I'm saying? So I guess that's where it's at. Yeah, you know what I mean? Where is that?
I've been writing some articles that actually focus on that whole fable. You can find them on my website under the title Illusions of Cain, or it looks like Quayen, but it's Cain, Illusions of Cain.
Okay, yeah.
I've got several more to add to it that aren't quite completed, but I wanted to knock out your interview before I started focusing on anything else. I'm very meticulous in how I write, so what should take me about 5 minutes usually takes me about 10 days.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to get Zach, I have to get you on the page too. I wanted to do, you know, because you've been doing a lot with the send, you know, with the network and everything, you know, if you don't mind. So I mean, you might get an email from me shortly, you know, somewhere sometime this week. But I don't want to throw that on the air like that. But go ahead, continue. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, I was just going to make a joke, but it's kind of gone and passed now. I was going to say, like, you know, Beast is very meticulous. He's very, very precise, where I am more like, you know, a cannonball jump in the swimming pool, splashed and just, like, you know, spread shit all around.
Oh, man. Let me just see if I got this thing. I'm trying to get this thing. Let me see if I got this. Did he show you the picture I sent him the other day?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, you got to see this. This is crazy. Yeah, you got to see this. This is crazy. He'll share it with you. I'm about to just trying to get this thing together as we're talking. Okay, that's good. Yeah, because sometimes with WordPress, man, the fonts and that shit is, you get stupid sometimes. So.
Yeah, WordPress is tricky, man. In fact, the first Send Network was on WordPress, and it collapsed like 2 weeks into it because we had technical difficulties, man. So we moved to a different place.
Yeah. It gets a little crazy sometimes with that whole thing. So, but it's good. I mean, it's good that we got, like, I think, too, like, you know, what changed a lot, too, definitely with people's thinking. And really what Satanic thought, too, was the internet, man. You know what I mean? Like, internet changed a lot of stuff up because you can get a lot of resources you just couldn't get years ago, you know?
Oh, for sure. You know, I think it's when Satan Speaks, LeVay's last book.
Mm-hmm.
He cautioned people about the internet and called it a net, and he referred to it as the web, like the spider's web.
Mm-hmm.
But he also said that the internet will change everything, or including Satan, something to that effect.
Wow. Yeah, it definitely has. But yeah, it does have its pros and cons. Yeah, because I want to interview you. I want to ask you something. Something has been on my mind. Like, it's kind of good, but, you know, it's like, it just kind of deals with reflection, like with what's going on now and the back of the days and the Satanic Panic and stuff like that. Well, that should ever reemerge again, you know, like that sort of thing. but we'll talk about it later. Yeah, but it's definitely brought some stuff to the table, to the forefront, and connected, like, a lot more people, you know what I'm saying? You know, connected a lot more people. There's a lot of people with a voice.
Oh, so, for sure, man. And you know what? The Satanic Panic is actually what pushed me into Satanism. It was like, what is all this nonsense? I got to figure this out for myself. You know, there's an element of darkness that attracted me.
Yeah,
you know, but
yeah.
It was like, but the Satanic Panic actually created a lot of Satanists. And I was, I'm 34,
wow.
So I was 12 or 13 back then. Well, you know,
mm-hmm.
at its height, and that's when I decided to go read the Satanic Bible. And actually, I stumbled upon the Necronomicon first.
Wow.
And I read about 20 pages of it, and I was like, what the fuck is this? Okay, I threw that book away. I didn't have any money, so I stole it from the mall. I stole it from the store. So, you see, I wasn't going to dip into my, you know, my allowance money, so.
Yeah.
And then I went back, and I was like, oh, here's the Satanic Bible. It's right next to the Necronomicon. Okay, let's try this one. I stole that one. And I read it, and I was like, wow, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, we got to take a survey one day, because it's like everybody I know, like, you said you were like 13 at the time, 13, like everybody that I know, like, that was the first two books they stole. Like,
yeah. Yeah, you know, I didn't steal bullshit. I didn't steal, no, no, I stole books because I was a nerd, man. I just stole books.
Yeah, because I hear that all the time. Like, yeah, I stole the Necronomicon, I stole the Satanic Bible. Oh, man.
All right, guys, I'm going to have to put you guys on hold for a minute and let you talk between each other. I got somebody who came in the store, all right?
Yeah, that's all right.
Man.
Yeah.
So hey. You're in New York, man. What's it like out there right now? What's the vibe like? I've never actually been to New York. I mean, I'm a West Coast guy. Been
yeah.
on the West Coast all my life.
It's definitely, like, a little bit busy. I mean, it's busy. Like, New York is, like, almost like a shock. If you come to the city, it's like, what the fuck? Because I've been to L.A. before. You know what I'm saying? I had an uncle that lived out in San Bernardino. And, like, it's a big difference, man. Like, buildings, it's funny. It's weird. You know what I'm saying? It can be a little bit weird. It's definitely like Gotham City. You know what I'm saying? Definitely like Gotham City. You know what I mean? Like, without a doubt, it's like Gotham. Like, the community out here, there are, like, a lot of people, you know, who got, who's into Satanism, left-hand path thought and stuff like that, but they're kind of, like, in the shadows. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I do. You know, what's weird about Satanism, man, is, I'm just basing the numbers off my site,
mm-hmm.
is that the majority of Satanists actually come from the South.
Yeah.
Alabama, Florida.
Get out of here.
They come from the Bible Belt, man. And that's like, I think that produces an outlash to Satanists, you know, because of the strict morality over there.
Yeah.
When you look at California, right, you think, okay, California is probably the most liberal state in the, or at least it's up there in the top three.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's no fucking, it's like fucking. Like,
wow.
20 people on my site from California and like hundreds of people from the South. I don't
know.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, because I would think it would be, California would be like a big spot. You know what I'm saying? You know, Hotel California and all that stuff like that. You know what I mean? That's what I was always thinking. I was like, oh, California's got to be, it's got to be crazy out here. But because of the way maybe the traffic is, you know, like in New York, you jump on a train, you're someplace like in a half an hour. Cali, you're driving for like about an hour and a half, you know? So, you know, I don't know how like the community is. When I was out there, it was like in San Diego, Los Angeles. Yeah, it was good. It was like a college time during that time, you know. So it was a good time, you know. But New York, there's people like around.
Like around.
Mad echo.
All right, I'm here, guys.
All right. I got the echo chamber on. Oh, the delay.
Oh, is there a delay?
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like a delay.
could be. I'm
so
not.
Beast,
Zach?
Beast, what's your thoughts, man? Why did so many Satanists come from the South, man? You're in the South. You're about as South as you fucking get.
Well, that's true. But actually, I mean, honestly, I consider myself to be from Ohio. I grew up at least to the point of a mature mind state in Ohio, and then I was forced into this backwoods Bible Belt death store, God's waiting room, so to speak, down here. And I don't know, maybe it's the presence of a church every tenth of a mile on both sides of the road with signs that have really cheesy, you know, come in and get saved lines on them.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You know, I never, the only time I've actually been to the Southeast is I picked up my fiance of many years ago in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'd never been to the South before. And I showed up, I flew out there, and then we drove back to Phoenix, and I showed up during Freaknik, or Frick, whatever that's called, man. I was like, what the fuck is going on, man? It was like party in the street. It was like the taxi guys wouldn't pick me up. Well, they picked me up, but they wouldn't pick anybody else up, and they were just like fucking, it was like chaos. I was like, is this what fucking Georgia's like?
Yeah.
It was entertaining.
Yeah, I haven't been down there in a while. It's interesting. Let me just see this thing. Oh, God.
I'll tell you what, I drove straight through until I hit Texas. That looks like, okay, we'll pass Alabama, we'll pass Louisiana, and we're going to stop in Texas and just fucking get a hotel here. Because I was too afraid to roll down my window, man.
Yeah, I can imagine. During that time, I can imagine. Do you get a chance to head down to Mexico over there? Oh, that's right. They closed the border up over there. You know what am I thinking about? You know what I mean? Over the Tijuana line. They don't really run that no more. You can't just, like, show your ID and walk over, huh?
No, you can, man. I tried when I came back to San Diego about 3 months ago. I was in Sacramento for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
I tried, man, and it was like passport. I was like, what? Passport?
Oh, man.
Here's my ID. Yeah, they want passports, man. But, yeah, like 10, 15 years ago when I went to Tijuana, man, it was like that's where you would go to, like, party.
Yeah.
You know, you go to a strip club, and a $20 bill would get you, like, 20 fucking lap dances. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not like that anymore. It's like, yeah, the whole 9/11 thing changed everything, I guess.
Yeah. No, you should see the guys up here in New York City, man. It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, they got, like, armed guards on the train station, you know what I mean, checking people's bags. You know, New York is interesting because some of that shit is just used to kind of, you know, get money out the system or whatever.
Right on.
Yeah. So, but you know how politics is anyway, so what it is.
Yeah, so man.
BC sent me a video about you going to China. What? You were in China for business? What was China like then?
I've been to China about a half a dozen times, actually, for business. And China is what I would call reality. I mean, when you think about the fact that China right now is the richest country in the world, and that the only thing missing over there that's not here is the presence of what's called a middle class, it kind of gave me a real good feeling for how much of everything that we take for granted every day is just a illusion. It's just something that's pretended to be there. If it wasn't for credit and credit cards, which there isn't a lot of that over in China, there'd be a lot of people with their kids playing naked in the dirt on the street and dogs hanging up outside being skinned and drained of blood so they could be cooked for dinner tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a real crazy experience for me because in some places that I was in, it was a third world country, if not worse. And in other places that I went to, they were billion-trillion-dollar mansions built out of terrazzo with these huge murals of the owner of the company. Yeah.
So stratification actually takes place there, like on a economic scale and on a social scale, is pretty evident.
It's very evident.
Mm. Do you think that that China has a probability of being like the next world power?
I think China is the next world power. It is the world power right now. I mean, they've bankrolled the U.S.
Mm.
They continue to bankroll and help out other people. They do all kinds of Sun Tzu-like things, you know, with the lead and the paint and the children's toys and, you know, all that crap. If anybody out there doesn't think that they're a real contender in today's, you know, global community, they're full of shit.
Yeah, now I've heard a lot about that. That's why I was kind of curious about that. Then when this guy Obama was doing his State of the Union address, and they would have people commenting on it, like some of his fellow comrades, they was like, "Yeah, America's failed, and it's going to fail again and again." So I was like, "Okay, you know what I'm saying? What is this dude saying?" You know. But I've been hearing a lot about China on that level, you know, China is being the next world power, or I guess it is now, you know. So it's interesting, yeah.
I mean, it's really all a matter of how the media is going to spin it to us, but I mean, the reality of it is that right now we're like something like $70 trillion in debt to China.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Bill me.
So, one of the things that I did really enjoy over there about China was, even though there was that hard dichotomy between the upper and lower class,
mm-hmm.
Everybody seemed to have a very purpose-filled, enjoyable life. They weren't so concerned about what they could get out of you so much as, you know, they were concerned about actually enjoying getting to know you. So,
That's good.
You know what's interesting, Beast, is I guess China has a pretty hard regulation on the internet about what they allow, you know, to be seen, and they filter a lot, because I look at Sin, and I look at, you know, people from different countries, and there's like 120 countries that are on Sin. There's like one person from China.
I think that's
the guy that was able to like get around the system somehow, because he really wanted to look at it. But other than that, you think that out of a country, or yeah, a country that's, you know, what, 2 billion people or something like that, that makes up like a quarter of the population of the world, you think there'd be more people, but there's like one dude.
That's crazy.
Huh?
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy. That's like being at a job. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's like being at work. You know, I wait till I get home to look at it. Or I can't look at it there either.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed that too, man, that certain, I don't know if it's servers or internet, but they have like they filter it. Like, you can't get in chat rooms. You know, mm-hmm. You can't go to Yahoo, like at your work or at school or whatever. It's like, really? I don't know if there's a way to do that, but there is.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. That's crazy. Let me see if I can pull this picture up. Yeah, that's wild. That's wild. Yeah, that, like for last week, I had problems. I think it was last week when I was at work. I had just listening to the show, so that's why I was like, I'll be out. I'm going to go home and listen to it, you know. But that's something that they just recently did in Egypt. Didn't they suspend the internet in Egypt when they was having that political thing going on over there?
Yeah, they suspended the whole internet, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, because that's a big form of communication now. So I guess the government's trying to get a handle on that on some levels, which is interesting. That's interesting.
Well, you know, I hope in our lifetime that it never comes down to it. I don't think it'll happen in our lifetime. I don't think there's going to be any blow up in China. I think it probably will happen eventually, but I think that's probably 100 years, maybe 200 years down the road. I think right now we're, you know, doing a diplomatic thing and shaking hands and whatnot, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. Not that I'll be alive to see it, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that may be in another time a little bit. You know, I think that may be coming down a little bit later down the line. You know, but yeah, it's interesting. It's really interesting how things kind of shift into play. Well, I kind of think of it like is, I guess China, you know, like Beast was saying, eventually the states are going to have to break down and tell these people, like, look, you know. Like we're kind of like a government on a lease, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? But in some ways, maybe, you know, for people not to panic, and if they won't lose their investment, they might just leave it the way it is for a while. You know?
Yeah. Right on.
Yeah.
Well, we've kind of lost Zach, it looks like, man, which is pretty common here. You know, if you have any follow-up questions or whatever, you're welcome to send them to me.
Are you online now?
Yeah, I'm online, and I'll be coming back. Hang on a second. We have another caller calling, Anna.
Okay.
304 area code.
That sounds like Midwest, right? That could be Zach.
No, hello. Zach. Callie. Hello.
Hey, this is Como White.
Oh, hey, how are you?
Did Zach drop off?
Yeah, he fell off the line just a couple of seconds ago.
I was just wanting to comment because I lived in South Korea for a year, and I was commenting on the internet blockage. Like, even in that country, I couldn't get on, like, a lot of USA sites. Like, Hulu was blocked for me. A lot of Fox sites was blocked, you know, television sites, a lot of things were blocked. And there was, you know, it was like the guy was saying about China, there was no middle class. It was either dirt poor or extremely well off.
Right. That guy would be me. I'm T.C. Downey or the Beast, but yeah.
I apologize. I just kind of tuned in.
Oh, that's quite all right. Anybody who takes such a good picture gets a little bit of forgiveness on my part. So, it's interesting because I got to actually, I spend quite a bit of time over in China, usually in 3-week, 4-week spans. And I got as far as Beihai, which is southern China.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that the life living has to be somewhat similar between the two regions, Korea and southern China. So
there was this yellow sand that they called Hung Sui that would blow down on South Korea from the desert, and it would, like, totally mess your lungs up. It had all kinds of pollutants and everything, and I got chemical pneumonia. Mm. Like my second month in Korea.
Did you feel, Beast, how did you feel, like, security-wise? Did you feel safe in the areas that you was going into?
No,
or?
Not at all. I was right at Area 1 on, like, I live 6 miles from the base, Camp Red Cloud, and there were days where they would have riots, and if you were white, you could not go out of your house. They would kill you. They would beat you. I've seen many women raped, like, in the back alleys near the base.
Wow.
I think that if you want to see Asian culture, go to China or Japan, but not South Korea, because it's too military controlled.
Mm-hmm.
There's,
right.
Like, 50% like, America is number one, and then the other 50% hates America.
Right on. And usually half of the 50% that says America is number one really hates America, and they're just looking for a chance to strap you to a bomb. But, yeah,
I dyed my hair brown over there, and they kept asking me if I was Russian at the time because I could not find any bleach.
Right on.
Wow.
Yeah.
How was it for you, Beast, over in China? Was it, you feel, I guess you said you went through some pockets areas, because my girlfriend, she's going over there in June for, she's into acupuncture, massage, therapy. She's trying to get her master's in that, so she's going over there for, like, a workshop.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you have to keep in mind that the entire Chinese public in general is convinced that every American is filthy rich. So,
yeah, I've seen that a lot in Asia.
So I was treated very well. I would go to the shopping mall in Hong Kong and be, you know, a quarter short of buying a Coke and not having any more cash on me, and I'd have someone just come over and offer to buy, you know, not only the one Coke that I wanted, but, you know, lunch for me, and, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. She had texted me earlier and said that her father was going with her, so I was a little bit more happy about that, you know what I'm saying, and going with a class of folks I don't really know like that. So that was good.
What I would tell her about China is in the areas where there are military, pay very close attention, because they will scream at you in their own language. They don't care if you speak their language or not. If you don't answer, you will get a gun drawn and sighted on you. And if you can answer, they will put you down. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. It's kind of getting like that over here, too, at least on the East Coast. You know, like in New York, this is a 9/11 thing. It's definitely, it's a police state, pretty much. You know, it's pretty much a police state over here, you know. So I think that stuff will be kind of dwindling down throughout the country, you know, over the next couple of years. How is, did you find anybody who was into Satanism out there?
No, actually I didn't, but what I did notice was that a lot of their ideologies, a lot of their thinkings all are based on similar premises. I don't think there's really a necessity for the quote-unquote Satanism, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, because people are like kind of there already, pretty much.
Right on.
Yeah, I can
well,
see that.
Zach has actually decided to join us again, so let me go ahead and put it on.
I'm going to go ahead and head. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're awesome. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Graybush, man.
Oh, shit. I only called back in because she was on the phone, man. What the fuck?
I thought I heard somebody in the background.
Story of my life.
Oh, that's funny. Anyway, guys, we got, I don't know, 27 minutes left in the show, and I'm really running out of shit to talk about here. The Church of Satan got beat to death, like, I don't know, within the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, there ain't much left to talk about the Church of Satan, because there's really not much left for the Church of Satan.
Yeah.
All right, man, we'll end this show.
So I guess what I'm going to throw out there is, does anybody have anything they want to put on the table to use up this last half hour?
Yeah, it was something I had on mind. Actually, I've been having it for like a minute. Do you think that it seems like there's been more people been coming towards interest in Left Hand Path, you know, sort of thought and everything like that? Do you think there's any processes, like, by the government to ever come in through and infiltrate something like that?
No, I don't necessarily know if it's a process by the government, but I think it is the consumer industry realizing that the way that you get people to purchase products is to give them a sense of, you know, the need for individuality. So, you know, like, why are you going to buy a yellow VW versus, you know, a pink Nissan if you're a guy, you know?
You know what? I don't think Satanists are big enough consumers to really influence the way marketing works. But that's an interesting topic, though, man. And maybe that'll be the next topic for the next ooze on Friday, or at least my ooze on Friday, is about the NWO and about the Illuminati. I think we could probably carry that topic for a while.
Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'd definitely be interested in hearing about that, because I've seen some things I'll tell you guys about later offline, maybe, you know. Going on, I'm like, interesting.
Right. Well, let me just again throw it out that I don't think that Satanism itself has a big market on the media. I think getting people to adhere to self-motivated philosophies creates a consumer. That's what I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I guess this is the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in.
All right. I'll catch y'all later. Beast, you should be up in like the next 15-20 minutes.
Awesome. I'll push that right on Satanic International Network so they can check it out.
Yeah, as soon as I finish, I'll hit you with the email.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. Take care, brother. All right.
Thanks.
Good night.
Later.
All right. Good night, Zach. Okay.
All right. And with all that being said and done, I now get to play my outro that I built this week. So let's see if everybody likes the outro.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but as your discretion goes. Number one, special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?